Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Crypto Sparta podcast. We got a special episode. Unfortunately, we missed last week due to me traveling to Dubai, but there's a lot of news. But let's just jump into the market. So go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, we got a remote podcast today. So Bitcoin right now is pretty euphoric. There's some
October.
October, I think, is in full effect because, Bitcoin is, passing that 60K threshold and Ethereum is at, around 3,800. Right now it's like slightly down, but like having Bitcoin go up and it was pumping, it went up 10%, going into the weekend, like Friday or so. And so we're really close to all-time highs of like 65,000. And so some of the speculation around this is the SEC has approved the first Bitcoin ETF that will allow you to, invest in futures. And so that was kind of the main bullish news that kind of ignited, Bitcoin's recent run. And right now Twitter has just been very euphoric as far as Bitcoin pumping, because as we discussed before, Bitcoin pumping is just kind of like the first domino to fall in the whole crypto market. Like, it'll go to Bitcoin, Ethereum, and then your large market caps, and then all the way down, it trickles down.
There's the name for that diagram, right? Where it's like the crypto cycle, where it's like first Bitcoin and then like Ethereum and then like alts.
High market cap coins, and then it trickles down. I don't know if there's a name, but it's definitely like a well-known diagram that's been passed around for sure. Like
five steps or whatever. It should be Googleable. Yeah. Maybe there's a name for it, but no, it's interesting because it's like when you talk with people that are like crypto native, it's interesting how Bitcoin going up, a lot of people, they don't do charts in fiat or dollars. People chart off of Bitcoin. And so then when Bitcoin pumps, it looks like you're losing money, because like if you have an alt and Bitcoin's pumping, then compared to Bitcoin, you're underperforming the market. And so people are like, just wait until Bitcoin slows down and then there's the rotation.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
people use Bitcoin as the base. So people talk a lot about like the Ethereum Bitcoin pair. Like, if in the scale, because you're basing off Bitcoin, the scale is really low. So Ethereum Bitcoin pair is like only like 0.05 or something. But when it, starts to, rise up to like 0.1, that's how you know, like, it's been pumping. So it's kind of weird.
Kind of takes up all the oxygen in the room when Bitcoin pumps.
Yeah. The maxis come out to play for sure.
Oh man. I was going to say that first there's a really good meme where it was like, someone was doing like a gesture that I just showed Brian, but, and it was like, and all of a sudden people started talking about moon and Lambos again.
Yeah, it's like the storytelling.
I didn't get to hear it. Did you see? I assume you saw the Twitter stuff, and I don't know if there's a recording of it, but apparently Mark Cuban was just shitting on some Bitcoin maxis last night.
Yeah, he was doing like a Twitter space or something.
With some guy that everybody is like, what an idiot, like some... He's got like an official sounding name, but everyone was just like, that guy's dumb. Like, and then he was saying, apparently he was like, yeah, all you Bitcoin people sound like those Cardano guy, sound like the Cardano guy. Like, I don't know. Apparently he defended himself pretty well and people were appreciating his takes. And I think it might've slipped that he had been in Ohm for like compounding for quite a while.
Yeah, that's Grimes, what I saw too. Grimes tweeted it. Elon, if people don't know who Grimes is she's like a singer that's like into robotic EDM, I guess, who had a baby with Elon Musk. So she's mainstream, but like it's kind of weird that Grimes is kind of into Ohm. She tweeted 3-3, which is like the main marketing or the main Twitter cult of the Ohm memes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just yeah, to go I, off that, I guess Pomp or A Pomp Liana. I mean, yeah, I mean, we can talk about that.
But that's kind of, you can talk about the market for Ohm and like the price action, because it was like Ohm has been pumping pretty hard for several months, and then there's just like a pretty sudden dip.
Yeah, so Tuesday, so Ohm, it's Olympus DAO. It's a reserve currency we talked about on the previous episode that I've been pretty bullish on as a way to gain passive income. And so there was a huge sell-off, like a, you know, 30% red candle. And then everyone was, you know, the FUD started to come out, and, you know, some of the original Ohmies or Olympus DAO founders had to like defend or were defending themselves and, you know, tweeting, kind of just calm the storm, I guess. But apparently it was just one wallet that was just leveraging his Ohm stake. And they also, this also came out around, they announced version 2 of Olympus DAO. And
isn't
so,
Olympus Pro? No.
There's Olympus Pro, and then there's, which is like their bond services. And then V2 is like they're more, they're trying to move more decentralized. And so it's something with their smart contracts, you know, forming an actual governance, you know, DAO. And then, so in order to move to V2, you cannot have like the leveraging, if you're leveraged, it won't transfer over to the new contract. And so people were selling off their, their leveraged position.
How do you leverage that dipped it?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure off like some DeFi protocol, you can leverage something.
Yeah.
But he had, you know, 21 million. I mean, I'm sure he got in early. So he had $21 million worth of Ohm that he was just, he just sold, or like he either got liquidated or sold off. And that just dipped the price like tremendously. Like it got back to,
like a good 17% dip, right? Or is it like
1200? No, it was more. It was 30%. Like,
oh, really?
Let me pull up the chart here.
It's a classic crypto thing, though, where people are like, oh my gosh, there's a huge dip. Ohm is at prices not...
It's a scam. Ponzi. It was true. All this Ponzi talk, it was true. And so it basically dipped, you know, it was at 1250 back to all-time highs. And then there was this huge red candle back to 750. And so that was, and then now it's, you know, the dip got eaten up, and now it's like hovering around 1,000. And it was funny, like all the people over the, over all the overreactions, people were like, oh my God, Ohm has not seen prices seen since the last 3 days. Instead of, you know, it's not like it crashed, you know, significantly. So now it's back to where it was basically a week ago. So I'm not worried. During that whole dip, my APY actually like went up from, you know, 7,500 to, you know, 8,300. So I was gaining extra Ohm. I thought about buying the dip, but, you know, I was a little stretched too thin. And because time is a fork of Ohm, time also took a hit. It was like at 8,000, it dipped to like 5,000. So that was like more of a
really
hit. Yeah.
I haven't been to charts, but.
But now it's back to like, you know, close to 7,000. So we're good as far as Ohm. And so we're fine. We're straight.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, and it's still at what, how many holders do they have? It's like not, it's like
It's only like 13,000. Or no, less than that, actually. Because I'm 13,000 is Urzdel. It's like 3,500.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like,
it's so weird how we're in like such a tiny little bubble. And yeah, man, you realize too, I was at that event, the boxing event, and it's like, I don't know. It just feels like everything is like this is huge. And like, we talk about it like it's normal.
Yeah, my Twitter feed is like all Twitter is like going nuts. But like in the grand scheme of things, like people don't really care.
Yeah. No, and like you talk about NFTs and like the rest of the world is just like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. OpenSea launched his mobile app. I got an email notification for that. So that's like another thing.
Oh, that was a long time back. That was a long time back.
They actually launched, no, well, Coinbase has an NFT platform. There's a wait list. But the OpenSea mobile app,
I had the OpenSea one for a while back, dude. That was old news. But I mean, it's whatever. It's like not even necessary. Like, why bother? Because it's like, I think you still have to connect your MetaMask anyway. So I still just use browsers. Like, I have the OpenSea app. And I'm like, why? But
yeah. The volume is still pretty high in OpenSea. Like, there, it's like outpacing Etsy, which is a market.
No, and then on the, like a flip weird side was looking at like we talk about markets, but it's like, and if there are listeners out there like Nick, the Pudgy Penguin market, it was really interesting to look at because I'm pretty sure that it's a scam because they have a lot of volume. And they were like, oh, yeah, probably nothing, you know. And then when it's an NFT thing where, like, if something, like, if there's, like, some alpha or, like, some news or, like, maybe, like, alphas and, like, hints or, like, tips or advice or shills, they always end it with probably nothing. They're like, yeah, CryptoPunk floor is getting eaten up, probably nothing. Or
I mean, that's kind of the Twitter, like, you know.
Yeah, that's, like, a classic, like.
And then a they Twitter say, like, joke, like a Twitter saying.
Yeah. Yeah, like,
probably not.
Yeah,
probably
the Pudgy Penguin. The floor dropped below 2, and it's hanging around 2. But there's like 40 ETH in volume, and then someone was like, "Oh yeah, probably nothing." And then someone was like, "Yeah, it's all the same 2 ETH penguins being flipped." Although the one of the banana
got flipped.
It did get sold. He listed for 1.7 though, and then sold at like 370. I want to say 370,000. Jeez. And but the guy was just fudding Pudgy Penguins. But I mean, the dude was kind of right. Like, I'm glad I sold mine at 2.5. And I mean, to be honest, when I get the money, I want to buy it back. But it was a good move. Like, I could see the floor starting to like kind of crumble, even though there's a lot of development. I mean, we still both have eggs and stuff. And I know that there's other things happening. But
yeah, I mean, my focus has definitely switched from NFTs to. You know, DeFi 2.0, so to speak.
The DeFi 2.0, like, and people are like, oh, is this just like some marketing scheme or scam or whatever? Or,
everything's a Ponzi. We're just printing internet money, man.
Yeah, printing internet money. And then, but I mean, it's been crazy here to meet the people in Dubai who are like, I mean,
yeah, we so both let's, know that let's,
client of ours where it was like, he was like, is it even real? And I'm like, there are people here that are rich off of this stuff, like big time.
Like from insane. Like 2017.
Or early? Just like not even 2017. And it's interesting because so I went to the crypto Twitter fight, and then I was just in line and then talking with like some British dude, had a Burberry shirt on. And it really gave me some perspective where I feel like Brian and I, and it's not like to brag, but like we kind of touch on all the different or a large variety of crypto stuff. And it seems like here people don't even do all these different things and they just do one thing that like, and then they make it off of that. And so the dude was like, I just like a year and a half ago started just doing degen shit on Uniswap. And then the guy was in England. He got the airdrop. I mean, this is one of the topics we didn't discuss beforehand, but that I want to discuss is how America screws consumers and retail And then other countries have it way better because, yeah, I mean, I think Americans were still eligible for the Uniswap airdrop, but for other airdrops, like, we're not eligible. And so, but the guy was just like, yeah, I was just doing degen shit on Uniswap and, like, I paid my trip here.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think, like, once you make your money, you kind of, like, you're kind of, like, you don't pay attention as much. You kind of, you know, phase out all the new stuff that's happening. So it's,
yeah,
like,
exactly. And yeah, the interesting thing, I was talking to him about NFTs and stuff, and he was like, yeah, I don't really know anything about it. Like, I'm rich. Like, who cares? But he was like, it was funny, too, because he was like, Pudgy Penguins did have a crazy amount of attention. And so it is one of the things, it's interesting. And the idea that I'm getting across is that people don't know about NFTs, but they hear about them. And then the people that aren't in NFTs that hear about NFTs heard about Penguins because it was like in the New York Times and shit.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me how, from a distance, they're just like, something, something, CryptoPunks, something, something, Penguins, something, something, Beeple. And like, but like a lot of the crypto Twitter people, like, I mean, the people here, yeah, a lot of them are just fucking made. So they don't care at all about other stuff. And a lot of them are like developers or business people. So that was an interesting thing. Besides the fight, the main thing that I had gone to was the World Blockchain Blockchain Summit or WBS or something or WSB, the Blockchain Summit, where there was like really big names, honestly. And I saw some teams and some people. Like, I saw the head of Binance in there's EMEA is Europe, Middle East, and Africa. I think it was the Binance Europe, Middle East, Africa head talking. Yeah. And like the head of IOTA, and shout out to James Sung. That was the guy who invited me out of the yacht party. He also spoke there. I met the Urzdel team, which was really cool. And I was just going around talking to developers, and the interesting thing to me was the developers and the business people. And it seems like the developers, they just focus on like the tech and building things, and they're not necessarily traders or investors. And then the business side people also are like, they're just normal business people that happen to be in crypto. So then I was, yeah, talking with the Urzdel team, and then they were like really interested in my perspective, since what we do in terms of like spending a lot of time on Twitter and podcasting and talking to people and then getting out there and talking with normal people and consulting people, they just don't have that perspective. And it's so weird to be like, yeah, man, like I've been flipping different coins and getting NFTs and stuff. And they're just like, dude, we have like a serious job. Like, I just do trips for marketing and business meetings and like acquiring clients and talking to banks. And like, they don't really have the same frame of reference that we do. And I really have gotten too deep into crypto to really have a good frame of reference of what other people have. So yeah, it's really interesting perspectives.
There's a lot of the crypto space is so large, but everyone has like their own like tunnel vision. And like, if you widen it out, it's kind of eye opening. Definitely like,
it's kind of like Keyboard Monkey being like, he was like a degen options trader in like traditional markets, and then now is just like focused solely on NFT markets. And it's like, yeah, you only need to know one thing. And I mean, I saw another Twitter thing, and it can be true for anything, where it's like, you only need to know one coin or one currency, like for an exchange, Forex, or you only need to know about one stock. And if you know how to time things, or if you know about that, like, all you need to do is be really good at trading one thing.
Yeah.
But it's just boring. And it's like, with crypto, with new stuff coming out all the time, it's like, it was one of the things where on one of the up onlys, they had talked about I think it was CryptoCred, was saying, like, you need to understand where you are on the human centipede of information.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I feel like we're obviously not at the front of it. Like, and I mean, that's an interesting thing is I've heard and been seeing and talking with people where they're in on like the pre-round VC shit, where it's like, yeah, like no one is hearing about it because these people are friends with the other people and they get to hear about it first. But
and they're front running people.
Yeah, exactly. And then for us, I mean, I still think that like, if we see something and we're like, oh, dude, this is like a new thing. And like, shout out to the shills that we've been doing where we usually are kind of early on almost all the stuff. And yeah, down the chain is kind of when people get eaten up, like the classic retail crap where it was like, man, if I just held on my Dogecoin, like I'm kicking myself. But once like the actual normie public gets to it, then you're kind of too late. But just the idea of the human centipede of knowledge and then meeting people and then seeing the developers and being at these conferences and seeing what actually takes place and how like the sausage is made, so to speak, is quite different than what you see on Twitter. Although Twitter is still, you can be near the front of the human centipede if you're like putting in all the hours that Brian and I do.
Or you just, I mean, it's all about following the right people too. You know, I mean, you got to have like some kind of judge of character of like who some people are, where it's like, oh, this, what this guy's talking about is really smart. He's not trying to bullshit me. And so, yeah, you kind of just, once you find like people that you feel like, you know, that are good and you know, how they deal with interactions on Twitter also tell a story where how they respond. They're not just like saying like, fuck you on Twitter. Like, you don't know anything. They're actually, like, trying to have a discussion or a discourse.
Well, that was one of the interesting things about, like, talking with the Urzel people, where they're, like, not necessarily tunnel vision, but they're so focused, and then they have their own personal discussions with people. And for them, they had talked about how they had had personal discussions with, like, bankers here, and then how they got a big chunk of liquidity added into the USDT pool because of the personal discussions that they had had. But then on the flip side, from our perspective of how to build a community and then what the community or what Twitter or, you know, the groups of people. And the interesting thing is it's like a big marketing thing and you end up with these communities that you can join. And I would say that I've been a part of different communities and then the communities that you join feed into other communities where it's like the people, the Link Marines feed into, you know, I was a Link Marine and then I got into Urzel, or
I'm a only, you know,
like I'm an federal. Old school OG NFT. I have CryptoPunks and yeah, I'm going to get a Pudgy Penguin now too, where it's like really impactful how you build these online communities. And then like, it's funny where, you know, there was the guide, you saw the guy about the Bored Ape guy who got the crazy offer.
Oh, no, it's a CryptoPunk. He's like, I got a CryptoPunk.
2.5 million.
Yeah, 2.5 million. And he didn't sell because, and the funny, the CryptoPunk has a cigarette and he has the exact same one without the cigarette. So he has two CryptoPunks, and the guy wanted to buy the one with the cigarette, and he had this long thread about how he didn't sell it, even though it would have broke the record for the largest CryptoPunk sale. And he, you know, what his defense was that he has built his brand based on that identity. All of these he's made VC deals or, you know, all these other crypto business deals based off his
ownership of the punk.
Ownership. So he's kind of like, he kind of like, you know, that is worth more than, you know, $9 million, which is what he offered, got offered. But it was funny, Ledger, I found this out from Ledger from Up Only. And he made a good point. He was like, Yo, $9 million is life-changing money. You own the same one without the cigarette. You can just have a story where it's like, I quit smoking. And now, like, you have, like, some Twitter, storyline where it's like, yo, I quit smoking. I'm a new man. Like, this is me now. And so your identity doesn't change because it's the exact same CryptoPunk. The only thing that's different is the... is a cigarette, and now he has $9 million.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I saw the other one though. I was gonna tell about the meme. It's a popular meme format where it's the girl being like, "Babe, can you come back to bed and have sex with me?" And then it's the other guy who's like looking at the computer and he's like, "No," or whatever. And then in this one, it was
red
like,
candles.
"Babe, can you just sell the JPEG and can we retire?" And he's like, "No, this is my identity now." I have to say, I totally understand, because I was using the Pudgy Penguin that I had as my profile picture. And then I told my family, my friends, everybody in my social circle knows that I'm into crypto. And then the Pudgy Penguin story, I have people that I haven't talked to for years being like, I saw your penguin, or like, I've been watching your Instagram and like, yeah, it's cool that you have that penguin, or like, and now I don't have the penguin anymore. And it kind of does feel like it hurts my brand, where I am the crypto person. And I just, again, in other news, I just need some cash because I'm in Dubai. And so I listed my Mooncat. And I'm kind of like, ugh, because my Crypto Sparta account on OpenSea that anybody can go and look up and you can see my collection. The Pudgy Penguin and the Mooncat, it does give you a certain level of clout. And then it also gives you entrance into the communities. I mean, the Mooncat community, I would argue, is not as strong, or it doesn't give you the clout of a Pudgy Penguin. And one of the main things is they're not, like, personalized, and there's way more of them. So, and then, like, people don't really, it's not like a profile picture either.
Which is an interesting thing. It's hard to identify them, too, their traits.
You can't identify them, and there's a lot of them. And, but I mean, the thesis that I always had was CryptoPunks were the first. They're, I'm out, I'm, I can't buy in, and that I'm out, I'm priced out. But the Mooncats, I was like, for sure they're going to go up. I just realized, I just checked, I bought at 0.33, I listed at 1.05, but the floor is right around 1. I'm like, damn, especially with ETH going up, I'm like, sick, $4,000
cat. It's a 3X if you went on the floor, if you went to the floor.
Yeah, but when it comes to like that stuff, it really is weird how quickly, and I encourage people that don't have NFTs to get NFTs, and then you understand, because it's like, I just recently saw somebody tweet about how it was like, yeah, like I was into crypto and then I got into NFTs and now 98% of my net worth is in NFTs and I have a hard time taking profits. Because you literally, it's a weird kind of addiction.
It's like a problem. Scissors. Like, it's scissors. Yeah. $40,000 for scissors. I gotta have them.
And I'm we're talking about the video, and man, maybe you can even play it so we can talk about it. Or
okay, we've definitely played it previously.
Yeah, we played it, but he's like, and I'm not selling a single one of them.
Yeah,
these are going to
zero. Yeah, I don't care if they're going to zero.
Oh, and then you realize, and like with a noop, you know, like, dude, there's a new mint. Like, I got to scratch together some money to mint these new things.
It's too much, man. I need a cup cat.
Yeah. Like, and then it's like the Twitter
the Froyo ones.
Oh, super rich in crypto. And then you look at their room and it's like a chair with a TV. It's like,
or it's the meme where it's like the guy's just laying on his twin size bread and it's full of empty cans and bottles.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there with his laptop.
Or like there's lots of different memes where it's like my bank account and it's like somebody broke, or like just like the image of poverty, and then it's like my crypto account, and it's like a fucking castle or some shit, like
in the metaverse.
Yeah, in the metaverse, like, I'm rich and I have like all these things. But like
look at my new house. I bought a house
in your parents' basement.
I bought a new house, and it's just like a house in Decentraland.
But I mean, it really is, and it's interesting because I think we had mentioned it on the last podcast about how there's the new retreat, the detox center for people who trade crypto.
Gambling addiction. There's a higher level for crypto traders than like your average sports gambler.
It's like some cabin in the woods or something for people who have problems with like leveraged crypto trading. But I totally get it, where it's like, I'm not trying to be like talked about personal finance, this or that, but I mean, I'm looking to be a digital nomad, so that's part of it, but I don't want to fucking pay rent. Like, I don't feel like I've made it enough to be able to buy myself a place. And yeah, when I go back to America, I'm going to stay in my parents' basement. Like,
yeah, I'm in my parents' house right now.
Probably the world. Yeah, exactly. And you're like, no, I need more money for more crypto coins. Like,
exactly.
Need to buy NFTs.
No rent, man. Rent's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, no, but I mean, no, but this trip to Dubai, it's been good. And yeah, selling the Pudgy Penguin, selling the Mooncat, like, I mean, worth it to be able to enjoy Dubai. And I felt like it's been a really big learning experience where, yeah, dude, some of the people I've met, I'll get into the shills, but I had gone to a yacht party last night, and it was kind of hilarious. But it was really an eye-opening experience where I was on the boat and there were people asking, you know, you look young, or how old are you? Or, you know, and I swear, I tell people, it's like, since I got chubby and fatter, like I look even younger because I got chubby cheeks. And, you know, I say, 29. And like, some people don't even take you seriously. But on the flip side, I was talking with this one dude, and I was like, yeah, I'm 29 or whatnot. And he's like, how old do you think I am? And I was like, I don't really know, man. This is a black dude. So it's like, you can't, I'm not going to, don't want to be like racist, but I couldn't tell. And I was like, he's taller than me. I'm a tall dude. I was like, I don't know. I'll just say 29. I can't really tell. And he's like, I'm 20. The dude's a millionaire. Like, there are millionaires. And I almost think that I had this discussion with him and some other people on the boat of, if you're all in on crypto at a younger age, I think that the younger people have an edge. It's almost like, you know, like gaming and stuff, where it's like,
you have no personal liabilities.
Nope. And then the guy was like, yeah, I'm not going to go to college. Like, why would I go to college? Yeah, and it's like, maybe I was like, yeah, man, I was just like 10 years off, like, you know, and if it was a different generation. But
even 2015, when we graduated, I remember hearing about Ethereum, you know, 2017. I didn't even know like how to trade it or how to buy it.
Yeah, I know.
And then, like, and then the interfaces weren't there.
Yeah. I was in business school, so obviously I didn't have any money to invest. Like, I was spending it with, it's an international business school, so I'm spending my money on travels and stuff and all that. And that was when like the market just totally crashed. And just reflecting on that, where it's like the market is in such a more mature position. But if you were in early, I mean, you're rich now, but yeah, you were in early, then you had to deal with the 2017 crash. Yeah, exactly. And like, there are crashes here and there.
Hurt people.
Yeah. Yeah. But, no, some of the other people, and it's kind of like, I'll give a preview of one of my shills, although I have another shill, but, it was insane. I met this guy, and I don't think he would mind me sharing his name. His name is Alex, and you can find him on crypto_Alex. He's a German guy. The dude is confident that he will be a billionaire in this decade. He was talking about how, like, yeah, you know, a while back, like, you know, when I just had like my first million and stuff, the dude is rich off of Bybit reference links.
What?
Yeah. It was like kind of irritating. Reference I was just. Links? And then this goes back to my point of why America sucks and screws people, because we're not allowed to do leverage trading. And then Bybit is like FTX. And he was like, yeah, you just say, you know, like they want influencers on their platform. So he talks with the people from Bybit. And like, yeah, you talk to them and then you talk to FTX and you say, hey, Bybit's offering me this, FTX is offering me that. And you just play them against each other. And I just have a lot of people and a couple whales that trade off my reference links and I'm rich. And like, I don't really need to do anything anymore.
Holy shit. Yeah. Definitely in the U.S., it feels like the government is.
Yeah. The government's screwing up. The government's screwing
up. It's front running. They're front running us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but nine figures. He's in the hundreds of millions. I think he was like 24. Oh my God. It was gross. But I mean, I was talking to him and I was talking. It was funny because you got to hold on to the little things where he was like, yeah, man, you know, I like try to stay in shape and stuff. So I just eat like boiled chicken and like salads. And I was like, dude, I know you're rich and but like, I don't even want your life, man. Like enjoy a steak. Like, but I mean, you have to tell yourself that to not lose your mind where you're like,
yeah,
these people are younger than me. And like, I'm grinding. Yeah. Like I'm feeling like we're all going to make it, like wag me. But at the same time, you're just like, you're here in Dubai. And the guy, he was on the floor at a table for the fights. And was talking about how he knows like Milkman, like ice bags and stuff. And like, mm-hmm. It's a really tiny circle. And
how much of it you think is like LARPing rich? You know, like I heard I know Kobe, you know, he tweeted like, you know, after hearing some stories, like 50% is like good times and like 50% is just people running up a huge bill and then ditching. You know, running away from
the check. Did you see what the actual story ended up happening though with ice bags, where he was like, yeah, one of the bills wasn't even their bill, the waiter just made a mistake, and so they got pinned with some stranger's bill by accident. And I think that's half of the reason they got pissed. But yeah, at the end of the day, but no, this guy that I was talking with, Alex, he knows Mo. And he was telling personal stories about how rich Mo was. So this is the opposite of LARP. Realize where they were like, he was like, yeah, the dude was traveling and he decided to get a bigger private jet when he was by himself for no reason. So like, it gets weird where, I know you had the LARPing question and my answer is like, I have no clue. And then the funny thing for me was I was at that blockchain summit, that's what it was. World Blockchain Summit, WBS, not WSB. But it seems like the people working in the industry are surprisingly not as rich as I expected. And they don't trade as much. So I think it's a very small sliver. And yeah, probably everybody else is a LARP, unless they're like, if you're famous from crypto Twitter, you're probably rich as fuck. But the rest of the people... But it's just mind-blowing how the rich people are just, like, unfathomably rich.
Yeah.
And I just said Mo, and Twitter handle is Abdullah with a 9. He was the one who put together the crypto Twitter fight. He's been handing out luxury watches to all the different people. And, like, Size Chad was there. I posted a photo, and then Crypto Sparta. I've got Manya doing the social. And then
yeah, check out Crypto Sparta here. Instagram.
Huh?
Yeah, check out the Instagram. Crypto Sparta Instagram. You'll see some of Daniel's stories.
3,000 views of the blockchain summit video, the reel that they put together.
It showed up on my Explorer page. 2,000 on LinkedIn?
Yeah?
Yeah, like the algorithm worked.
The algorithm worked. And then the next day I was at like a free block or a crypto event. And like a fraction of the Yeah, the algorithm knows because they were probably geotagging and stuff and like tagging to the summit because, yeah, the next day I got a fraction of the social media interactions. But that was it's been a big benefit to come here where at least like, that's what I was saying, you know, with your brand where it's like, it's just good for my brand to be here and it's good for my brand to still have the Pudgy Penguin. But I mean, I'm glad that, like I said, I got out at the 2.5 instead of, you know, now the floor dropped. But I want them back. Why? I want the Penguin. Well, it's not listed. I've been looking at the floor to see if I made a good deal or not. I've been checking and it was listed for 2.3 like a week later. And it was funny. I was looking at Fu the Panda where he was like, he sold a penguin and then bought a penguin back. And he was like, Fu's going to get rich just flipping penguins.
No, he's going to flip that one penguin. He's trying to buy it. So he bought it like 0.69 and he sold it for like 3. And then he's trying to buy it back at like 2. And then he's going to be like, I'm going to try to, make $1,000 ETH or $1 million off trading one penguin. And then it's like a penguin with a durag. Yeah. And somebody like showed that tweet to the owner or whatnot and he delisted it.
Yeah. And I mean, it was interesting. I think we had talked about it on another podcast, but the idea of how NFTs, the ownership can be tracked and the increased value of who owns it. And we had talked also about how like Keyboard Monkey, there was the meme of like the guy being like, oh, I sold my NFT and it's like a happy dude. And then the next image is the same guy upset. And it's like, I sold it to Keyboard Monkey.
Yeah.
But like anything that Keyboard Monkey probably buys increases in value. And there are certain people where, like, if you got, there was a penguin that Scrooge McDuck bought with an afro. And it's the same thing where it's like, certain people buy certain ones and it probably increases the value. That one probably less so, but
it's more on reputation. It's like, this guy knows something. He's made good, NFT trades. Him buying this is like, probably he knows something that I don't, you're kind of taking.
Or like the honorary NFTs where like people are buying honorary NFTs because they're like fans of the person or something. I mean, it's just interesting ideas of like, ownership and then just like different, like ideas revolving around that. But no, man, I mean, it's been really interesting here. I'm not sure if I touched on all this stuff, but so maybe we should.
Well, I have one more question before we wrap things up. Like we were at the Bitcoin conference. Like, how does that compare to, Dubai versus the Bitcoin conference? Is it just like more professional, like more, just on another level?
I'd say it's smaller. It's smaller and it's more like concentrated wealth. I mean, the one thing was, I feel like at the Bitcoin conference, we didn't hit all the parties or anything that like we could have. And then here I've kind of like, I also haven't hit all the parties that I could have, but it's like, it's easier to sort through the people here where I think the Bitcoin conference, there was just like a lot of maxis. For one, it's also not so focused on Bitcoin. It's more just crypto in general. And then like the other things are that the people are noticeable here and it's more like rich stuff and rich people and yacht parties. Although the same thing happened in Miami. So, I mean, it's just kind of like the scale is like the big difference. The conferences are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Miami is more accessible and it's more Americans. And then also it was like earlier in COVID, but this is definitely like an international event where it's like people are flying in from all over. I met a friend from Dubai or that lives here. I mean, but he wasn't here for the crypto conference. So I haven't necessarily met anybody that was like from here for this, but it's also, I mean, goes back to the fact of how America is screwing stuff up. Dubai is really pro crypto. And then also because of the income taxes, there's a lot of people moving here for this.
Really?
And then it's not just one event. The thing is, there's events like every day and there are multiple conferences. And so the whole vibe is like people were being like, oh, you have a company, like, where are you headquartered? And I was like, you know, just where I'm from in Minnesota. I probably should have done it in South Dakota or Delaware to like avoid taxes. And people are like, why aren't you incorporated offshore? And everybody is setting up a branch or a headquarters here in Dubai for tax purposes. And also it's just like kind of a good middle ground for a lot of people. Cause yeah, there's also a lot of Asian people. I didn't even tell you about how last night I met people from Huobi.
Oh shit. Yeah.
Yeah. There were people from Huobi. And then, yeah, there was like a, yeah, he was like 19 years old. And they were like, yeah, he's a whale.
You.
This 19-year-old guy that couldn't speak very good English. And I had this other girl who was working for Huobi translating. He had a Binance shirt. And then they were like, yeah, he's like a genius. He's doing civil engineering in one of the best schools in China. And he's like a high-level leveraged options trader. And like the dude was like a little kid. And they're like, yeah, he's a whale. Like if he... He moves markets with his trades. And I was just like, what the fuck?
Oh, wild. That sounds like a good time.
It was funny. But
one day.
Yeah, I mean, Dubai, it's been quite different. And then, yeah, the thing is, it wasn't just people flying in. A lot of the people are here permanently. So then there's like people that are hosting stuff and hosting parties and everything. And it seems like the crypto people that are in the industry working, not just like traders or investors, has some familiarity with this place because it's like there's always events going on. There's a lot of headquarters here. So there's a different familiarity where it's a smaller city. It's way more baller. And like Miami was like people coming in for one event for a bit. And then the Bitcoin conference was like a lot of cringe maxis. And then there were other parties that we didn't see. But here, it's like a lot of different little events, less cringe maxis. And like the ballers are really fucking ballers. I mean, dude, like if you go to a bar or something, beers are like 15, 20 bucks. It's disgusting.
Jeez.
And so, I mean, that's another difference where we stocked up at a, what's it called when you get through the airport?
Duty free.
And so we stocked up at the duty free, but yeah, it's just like, that's the difference where stuff's more expensive. There are less people and the people that are here are way more baller.
Sounds like the conversations were more meaningful
big time
than Bitcoin.
It's not like some random dude who's like some tinfoil hat libertarian who believes in Bitcoin. Like people that actually understand the technologies, lots of different coins, lots of like developing projects, lots of investing. That's like the thing is also like half the people I spoke to are like, oh yeah, we raised funds here. We raised funds there. Like they're talking about raising rounds and technology. And like the Bitcoin conference was just like HODL.
Yeah.
It's all HODL.
What do you think about Bitcoin? Like, you think it's going anywhere?
There's a lot of differences. Now that I'm thinking about it, it was a good question that you asked because there's a lot of differences, to be honest.
Yeah, damn. Kind of jealous I didn't go.
Next time. Yeah. No, and there'll be another one. They're saying that they're going to do another boxing event. And
Rookie XPT won.
Yeah.
He finally doxed himself. I was like surprised. I totally thought he was just some white dude, but yeah.
I did too. Yeah.
He's not white.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
But we'll have to make it for the next one for sure. The place is really fun. Dubai, great city. I'm very surprised at how much I love it here. But
I mean, with the pace of crypto in general, like maybe next year we'll be the ballers, you know, like who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. And then, it's just a good place to rub shoulders. I think it's easier to rub shoulders here with the people at the Bitcoin conference. I think we ran into hardwood, but that's it.
But I think there's a lot more LARPing in Miami for sure, too.
Yep.
And by LARPing, I mean live action role playing. So, like, you know, faking.
Acting, faking and stuff.
But yeah. So I think that's a good place to wrap up. And, you know, do we want to do shills?
Yeah, let's do shills real quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'll go first. And then, one of the shills, and I was talking with the guy about it, and not legal or financial advice, but he was like, I was like, it sucks like that. I can't do vibe it stuff. He's like, you can do it. You can do reference links. Like, you just can't tell the government. So if you have a big following and if you're outside of America, let's say that, reference links and just getting yourself a little multi-level marketing scheme, it's not even a Ponzi, but I like calling it a Ponzi. But it's like,
Ponzi is just like an inside joke, for crypto. Like, we call things Ponzi's because, it's internet money.
Yeah.
You're generating it from nothing. Fugazi, fugazi.
Yeah. The super rich dude, we messaged on Instagram, and I swear he must have had it, pre-typed out, because he sent me, hey, what's up, dude? How's your trading going? And it was also in bad English. And then I was like, yeah, good. Like, it felt like a scam Twitter.
Like a bot or something.
It felt like it, but I knew it was he only follows 1,000, 2,000 people. And I was like, yeah, trading's good. Like, what's up? And he was like, I would like to tell you about this. I'll just open the Instagram and tell you about it. Cause it was funny to see, but,
I feel like that makes you, that like blurs the lines between like a phishing, like getting scammed or a real person, because usually like a tell-all sign that you're getting scammed is someone uses bad English, to advertise something.
Yeah. But I mean, the guy had gotten invited onto this yacht party, which was like an invite only from a guy in the industry. And then the guy that was there knew him personally and stuff. And the other people knew him. So I could tell he was a legit dude, but. Yeah, hello. How is your trade going? Like, it's not even trading. He said trade.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that's good to hear. Well, my trade is perfectly okay, and I'm earning a lot of huge and great profit on a weekly basis. Could help you out as well, only if you read about it or if you're ready about it. Mm-hmm. There's a platform I'd love to introduce you to where you can trade your Bitcoin and make good earnings on a weekly basis. The idea is building a solid capital foundation for beginners by helping out with trades. Well, they watch, learn, and at the same time build their capital. The offer is limited, so it won't be available after now. So we won't be able to accommodate a very high population. Like, it's a classic. I was in sales. Like, this is like a classic, the limited time offer. Like, good platform if you're ready. Like, you can make good money. And it was like, I was in Amway for a while in college. Like, I like to hear about these multi-level marketing scams and stuff like that. And, so, I mean, if you can pull it off, Bybit references, but my actual more official shill is, dude, I've been killing it with the Phantom. The Phantom has been running. Yeah, I think it popped to all-time highs as of today.
Dude, they got an ohm on Phantom.
They're adding everything. There's Phantom NFTs. For those of you that are risking it, it's 232, all-time highs, up 18% today, which is sweet. That was my original one. I'm very proud of it, and I tell everybody, got in at 6 cents.
Yeah.
It's at 232. And I keep a chunk of it in just Phantom, but then minting the Phantom USD and then doing the pool of Phantom USD and Phantom. So that's my shill. It's been killing it. And I've seen a lot of people very bullish. And I think in the same way that it's run just like Solana ran, but I think it hasn't had its, nobody talks about it. I don't know
why. Yeah, there's just
they just don't have the same marketing. Exactly. Just like they don't have that Sam Bankman-Fried money to just dump into marketing. Yeah.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, if you have a good product, the cream rises to the top. So,
but I mean, I don't know. It's weird because for me, I got it at 6 cents. It ran to 50, And then it just bounced between like 40 and 60 forever. And then I was just like, you say cream rises to the top, but I'm just like, it's not going fast enough. Like, why? Nobody talks about it. It's not rising enough. And I mean, it's weird because I just take it for granted. And the thing is, I moved it onto my Phantom wallet a long time ago. And I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I was pretty new to like altcoins and stuff and had to move my ETH to Phantom. It was just confusing. So the nice thing about that is like, I don't touch it because I'm like, I don't even.
It's too confusing to get it out.
It took me like a couple hours or something. And I had to like go on the website, follow instructions. And now it's in the Phantom wallet and it's in the pools. When I minted the Phantom USD and wrapped Phantom, I was like, am I going to lose this money? Like, it was scary for me. I legit was like, this is either going to be a really good deal or like I'm like screwing something up. And then additionally with the pool, I am worried about impermanent loss because when it runs up, I see that, yeah, I get more Phantom USD, but the wrapped Phantom goes down. So it is a little sketchy, but I mean, just having Phantom is fine. And then there's all sorts of pools and then there's the decentralized exchanges on there as well. So bullish on the Phantom network, but I'll let you go ahead with your show and then we can wrap it up and watch.
Yeah. So Ohm is making good money, obviously. And you talk about things going faster. I mean, I'm supposed to be giving 8,000% and it's auto compounding every 8 hours, but I want it to go faster. Like there's all these spreadsheet calculations of like, if I hold for 360 days, like how much money I'll get. And that number
they
is
don't
like,
want you shouldn't talk about it. Right. Like you don't want to lose.
I just
want to
like forget about it. Honestly. Like,
yeah, exactly. Just not even, but you can't.
Yeah,
not
I'm like it. Cause it compounds every 8 hours, man. Like it's crazy. It's addicting. And so a basis off that, one of their, one of the core, coins that's in the reserve treasury for Ohm is this DeFi token called Spell. And the name and the whole concept is really funny. It's called Abracadabra Money. And it's basically like a yield farm or like a staking mechanism, a lending platform where you can use what you lend as collateral. Similar to what the Urzel platform was. I think it's more, I think maybe the technology of the platform may be a little bit better. And it's basically, you can just, lend or stake a certain amount. You'll get like 25% spell. And then you can use that as collateral for, any token, which is a stable coin, and basically use that as a loan. The interest is only like 0.5%, and you're earning like, more reward staking. So it goes off that kind of Urzel concept with the different mechanisms and stuff. So you can, generate a yield. Let's say you're staking your spell, you can get a USDC loan. And then you'll get like 5% a year and you only have to pay like, 0.8% fee. And then you'll have that money to spend whatever.
Yeah. It's almost like an additional piggyback. Super. And then there's this, I think I've talked about the account before, but the, yield farmer guy, like very bullish on like crypto loans and then taking out loans and then staking them. Like if you can do it right, like the arbitrage and how he had talked about the arbitrage where it's like, Urzel offers 20%. You can take out loans on Aave for 4, like rinse and repeat. Okay. Like put your crypto up as collateral. Borrow dollars, stake the dollars, borrow dollars off the stake dollars.
just the arbitrage percentage, I think. It's just crazy, man.
Yeah.
Like one of these days when ETH gas is still like moderately pretty high. It's like not like Avalanche. Like Avalanche staking into time was like super easy, and like you don't really care about it because the, you know, the gas fees on Avalanche are like, you know, significantly smaller. But ETH is just it's hard to just play around more now for sure. But yeah, that was a, you know, a solid episode for the Crypto Spartak podcast.
Definitely. We'll do another one. I'm extending my stay in Dubai, so I'll keep you updated. I've got some meetings this week and then a conference, and so we'll have some more things to discuss. And yeah, yeah, I'll make it back to the US before too long. But
yeah, follow Crypto Sparta on all on LLC on Instagram, you know, on Twitter. Yeah, there's good stuff. It's growing pretty good. So that's it. Thanks, Nick, for listening.
Yeah, peace out.